The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Buddy Bill Buckmaster, along with Ray Allen, Ray on the other side of the glass, who's engineering and producing the show. Is it ever going to stop raining in Wilmington, North Carolina? They're still getting rain. I'll tell you, these stories out of that flooded area just breaking my heart, and I'm sure everybody else's as well, with the one-year-old child that was the body that was swept away, the mother and child killed when a huge tree crashed into their home. I mean, there is certainly a lot of misery down there, and our hearts really go out to the people of North Carolina. I mean, Wilmington is basically cut off. There's no way into that city right now. Vince, that is really, it's a horrible thing.
What a terrible thing. It's tough to live out there in those circumstances, and for those that were advised to get out, they should have gotten out, and many did, and some didn't, and that's always a rough situation to be in for those especially.
Really is. It's the Monday political face-off. Our commentators, you just heard from one of them, Vince Robigo, longtime Democratic Party activist, former Arizona Attorney General candidate, and also with us today, John Munger. John is here, well-known attorney. Well, Vince is a well-known Tucson attorney, too, so they're both well-known Tucson attorneys. John is the former chair of the Arizona Board of Regents. He's also ran for statewide office in 2010. John ran as Republican candidate for Arizona governor. The Monday Political Face-Off, sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe's specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. John, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. How are you today?
And I'm sure your heart is also breaking with those stories out of the Carolinas.
Certainly.
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It's just been a lot of misery down there. Vince and John, I want to begin with these political ads. It seems like they're just every cycle, Vince, they get nastier, don't they? I mean, who are these ads aimed at?
Well, you know, it really depends. The ads have been getting more negative over the last, probably the last decade, actually. And, it's been a big item of research for a lot of these political scientists who are studying these ads and how do they work, do they work, what do they do? And it's a really, it's a mixed question. Sometimes it's designed to stick something negative in people's minds who are sort of maybe not actively listening. They say that tends to, it sticks in the mind even though the people in general, across the board, all political parties do not like them.
They turn me off.
They turn people off, and that's part of the issue. One of the aspects of some of these ads and one of the cynical uses of some of these ads is to depress turnout, to get people turned off. Well, because it may impact. If you can change a percentage point in terms of who actually goes out to vote, that may alter the impact, the actual election. And so if people stay home because they're disgusted with the process and don't want to vote, that may impact an election. And so who it's targeted at may depend on the race. It also depends on national money. Sometimes now that with sort of the doors and the gates wide open to corporate money and anonymous, which I think is a terrible idea, anonymous corporate money attacking people, you see all sorts of different groups attacking candidates, and oftentimes with outright falsehoods. They just misstate what happened, show no real sort of compunction for the truth, and that's why people don't like these ads. But to some degree, they are effective for different reasons. Either it's sort of tarring and feathering somebody, even though it may not be true at all. And other times it's designed to sort of suppress turnout. Other times it's designed to anger a certain base population and get certain voters, let's say on one political party, excited or energized and angry enough to motivate them to get out and vote.
I guess it could backfire in many ways.
They can backfire, and so that is one of the big dangers of these ads, particularly when it comes back and boomerangs back to either attack the integrity or the credibility of a candidate. Then it, you know, obviously all that money is not only down the drain, but you have a boomerang effect, and it sort of tarnishes the person that they are trying to help.
What do you think, John?
Well, I think there are pros and cons to negative ads. Sometimes they do turn people off. Sometimes they inform people of what the other candidate is really all about. So I think it depends on how they're done. If you're running against a candidate who's got problems, why not let the public know about those problems? What's wrong with that? We know that sometimes it makes people angry, and it may make people angry who are on the side of the candidate who's being attacked, but of course. But I think the public has a right to know about not just the pros of one candidate, but the cons of the other candidate. What is wrong with that? You do run a risk that you're going to turn people off. But very frankly, the reason you see so many negative ads is they work.
Well, go ahead, Bill.
No, I was just going to bring up this ad that's paid for by political action group, Republican group, running for Leah Marquez Peterson, the Republican candidate in CD2, that features the late Senator John McCain talking about Leah's opponent, Ann Kirkpatrick, that was taken from the 2016 campaign when the senator ran against Ann. The senator was just buried 2 weeks ago.
Well, that, you know, in a situation like that, that's a very, very unfortunate and, I believe, improper and classless use of our deceased senator's image and names, and it was done without the family's permission. I think that is an example where it is that's not, you know, strictly like negative advertising. Obviously, they're using it, whatever the senator said, and trying to use that to attack Ann Kirkpatrick. But the reality is that's one where that really, I think, hurts Leah Marquez Peterson's campaign. It makes her campaign, makes the candidate that they are trying to support. There has to be some shred, some modicum of class and sort of acceptable standards that we all live by. And this goes beyond politics. And when you do that and you take somebody who has just been buried and use that person's image and words to try to attack somebody and bolster another candidate, she ought to be getting those ads down and denouncing them, because it hurts her, and it hurts her amongst the voters that she needs to win over.
Independence.
Correct.
Yeah. John, what do you think about that?
Is it
over the line or no?
You know, it's hard to tell. People may or may not like it, and that's a judgment that has to be made, and I'm not here to make that judgment. After the very political funeral of Senator McCain, where we had attacks against Trump, it was very political. I'm not surprised to see somebody still keep Senator McCain involved in the political process. It wasn't Leah, let's point that out. It was some independent group, and it is against the law for independent groups to coordinate with Leah's candidate's campaign, in this case Leah's campaign. So they've run this. Leah's not responsible for it. I don't know whether it angers people or not. It did not anger me. And the reason it did not anger me is because Senator McCain is talking about Ann Kirkpatrick. And what he said was true then and is true now. And I don't see why the public personally It didn't offend me, and I don't see why the public shouldn't have that information of what Senator McCain's position about Ann Kirkpatrick was. I think it would have been wise for that campaign or for that group of people, independent campaign, to talk to the McCain family, but I don't think it was necessarily required. I'm looking for information. And all of these rules that people want to talk about, what's ethical and what's not, that's in the taste, the eye of the beholder and the taste of the beholder. So that's up to people to judge.
And that's what voters are going to do. They're going to judge that campaign and the people that are supporting Marcus Peterson as people that will say anything and dredge up things from a different campaign from years ago, from somebody who was just, from years ago, where somebody who's just been put into a grave, and we are honoring his memory, and to use that shows that it is a say anything, do anything approach, and that they don't care about acceptable standards. And I'm saying, like, again, this goes beyond just this question of negativity in politics. This has to do with how we treat our deceased, how we treat people. And I have to disagree. There may be an implicit messages in as far as symbolism in Senator McCain's funeral, but there were no political attacks. Mr. Trump's name was not mentioned in the funeral. That is just trying to make some sort of an excuse and say, oh, it's okay because Mr. Senator McCain, who was a very political figure, had a political funeral.
Well, the reality, his daughter did attack Trump at the funeral.
Did you remember watching his name? He did not mention. They did
not mention the name, but it was a clear attack on Trump.
Well, you know what? And what does that have to do with saying that that's okay? Well, therefore, it's okay to use Senator McCain's image in this untasteful way?
Let's talk about ethics. And I'm not here to judge. And I don't.
Well, the voters are going to judge.
Well, the voters should judge. I have no problem with that. But, you know, this happens on both sides of the political spectrum. All of a sudden, you have a former president, Obama, who's back doing what other presidents have not done and get involved directly in a campaign immediately after he's left the presidency.
Okay,
that's inappropriate, too. I mean, things like that happen. I don't like former President Obama getting involved in that. You don't like the McCain ads. I'm looking at it from a factual point of view. If there's something wrong with what McCain said, fine.
President Obama's not doing campaign ads. Completely different.
He's doing campaign speeches all over the country.
Not doing campaign ads. Different story.
Let's pause right here. The Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Also, support comes from our favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Stop by right now for lunch. I guess you could do brunch, too. Have some bakery goods. And certainly a great sandwich on that bread that came out of the oven just a few hours ago. Mona's, located again, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Go to my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link to Mona's, Danish Bakery, and all of our great sponsors. Be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Tuesday during the noon hour, we'll talk with UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido. Also, certified financial planner Shelley Fishman with our Tuesday Moneymaker Report. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on Tucson's Voice, AM 1030 KVOI. Have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Monday Political Face-Off. Let's switch now from political ads and a somewhat controversial local political ad to now the situation with Judge Kavanaugh and these allegations against the judge, that allegations, an incident that allegedly happened, Vince, 36 years ago. Do you think this might have an impact in delaying perhaps the vote?
Well, I don't know if it's going to have an impact on delaying the vote, and part of the problem with that is that the GOP, the Republicans that are in charge there in the Senate, are trying to push this through, and it's been evident, obviously, you know, for weeks that they were trying to push this through without a full inquiry into this nominee's background. They didn't want all the documents released. They were trying to push it through. They were claiming certain documents were privileged. And they were dumping documents, you know, 40,000 documents the night before the hearing started, saying, okay, here's some documents you can look at. And so the whole process has been wrong. And because of that, I don't know that these people are going to delay it. They should. The American people want a full inquiry. They want full transparency. They want to have their voices heard. But what you have is the majority, you know, so you have that, what, 51, 52, however many senators, GOP and Grassley in charge of it, saying that they're going to go forward with this vote. The American people don't want it. I don't know that this is going to delay it, but it is going to impact how the votes happen. It's going to impact what America wants, and I think they want a full inquiry. These are serious allegations. And I think that, you know, if it requires to delay, frankly, on a bigger scale, aside from these allegations, I don't even think this vote should happen until after the midterms. Okay. That's my position. But aside from that, you know, the American people would rather have whoever's going to be representing them have a true and accurate voice in the process.
John, has he been vetted properly?
Oh, sure. He's had more documents disclosed, pages of documents, than any other nominee to the Supreme Court. the documents that were alleged to be privileged were documents principally that he had in his hands when he was working for President Bush, and they were presidential documents. That's why they were claimed to be privileged, is they weren't writings of him, by him, maybe notations in the pages, but to a president. But they've had more documents, more cases than any other nominee since. You've had him endorsed by the American Bar Association, which is a liberal association, I can tell you. Insofar as this newest allegation, the Democrats have known about that allegation since July and just brought it up here in the last minute to try to slow things down. The allegation is by a woman who claimed when he was in high school he tried to force himself on her. The other witnesses that were there said, one said, this is absolutely nuts, it didn't happen. And very frankly, my point of view, very practically, is this happened in high school. Who cares?
36 years ago.
Yeah, in high school. I mean, high school boys do crazy things.
Who cares
things.
About an attempted rape? Oh, that is stunning. To hear. That is the problem 36, with the modern day
36
GOP.
Years ago. This guy, don't be telling me about that when you went through Bill Clinton and we're all supportive of Bill Clinton in the White House. I don't want to hear about it.
Hey, I don't care what you want to hear about. Well, you're here telling the American people that who cares about an attempted rape.
That's
what you're saying.
36,
say it again.
Yeah,
30, say it again.
36 years.
GOP doesn't care about attempted
I don't
rape.
Care. I didn't
you
say
just
speak,
said you don't care.
I didn't speak for the GOP. I spoke
for me.
That's
what you're here on behalf of,
I'm here on behalf of me, Vince.
Then that,
and
that reflects
I don't
poorly
care.
On you then.
I don't care what happened 36 years ago. High school boys do funny things, but...
High school boys don't go around trying to rape people, John.
High school boys do funny things, Vince, and I don't think you should be holding this against this guy, especially since everybody else but this woman, everybody else involved says, this is absolutely nuts, it did not happen. 65 separate girls... from his high school classes, that is not the Vince or the Brett Kavanaugh I know. And so my view is, it didn't happen. And my personal view is, and all of the evidence says it didn't happen.
That's baloney.
And
I'll address that in a second.
Well, you can address it all you want, but my view is, it didn't happen. All of the witnesses, except this one woman, says it didn't happen.
All right.
This guy has been vetted. The Democrats have held this since July to try and sneak up on this process and to try and slow it down. It is not going to slow it down, and the vote is going to go through on schedule.
Vince, would you mind if, before
sure,
your
ahead.
Comment, we take Julie's call, because this
yes.
is on topic. Hey, Julie, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. This lady and her husband and family live right in the middle of Silicon Valley. She teaches at, what'd she say, Palo Alto-type university, which I guess I've heard is Stanford, right there in the smack dab of liberals. She has everything in the world to gain by going against Kavanaugh. She's looking for big money. She's looking for fame and fortune, and so is her husband. Unless she's been paid right now, and apparently it's coming out that she has signed on as an anti-Trump activist. So she can lie, and it'll just get her more. So I think this is extremely low of the Democratic Party to lower themselves that much that they can't take this man who's extremely fair, he's shown to be pure and clean, and go back to some supposedly rape in high school, and he never did it, and she can't remember how old she was, where she was, what year in school she was. She can't remember anything, but man, she's going for the money and the fame.
Okay, Julie, thank you. Going for the money and the fame, Vince.
Well, first of all, that is, with all due respect to Julie, that's just bunk. The reality is that she didn't want to come forward. She wanted to remain anonymous. She talked to people. When she reported it, she actually then contacted, and they went and had a lie detector test done with an FBI agent, and that was in early August. And she wasn't going to come forward. Then what happened is then other people started releasing tips about it. And then it started becoming, you know, information started coming out, and people started prying into her private life. And rather than have others tell the story for her, she decided to come forward. Now, as far as saying this is bunk, the reality is that she revealed the incidents of this detail in 2012. At a marriage counseling session. Her husband reported it and has confirmed it. And the notes of the session reports that she reported an attempted rape back at that time in high school by these two privileged individuals that later became high-ranking society members in Washington, D.C. So the bottom line is that she never wanted to come forward until it came out that, look, this guy may become a Supreme Court justice. You know what? The reality is sometimes these things happen and people don't want to report them. She was, I think, 15 at the time. And so the reality is you have people that just are going to smear her. And this is exactly why the comments of your caller are exactly why people don't want to come forward. But we're at a different time and age than what happened previously. This is a person who is a respected professor, I believe, at Stanford University. Has no need for fame.
She's
or
not
fortune.
At Stanford.
Well, she's a professor at a university. This is not a person out there trying to,
okay, John,
to get fame or glory. And at the very end, with respect to John, at the end of the day, these are important allegations.
Okay.
I don't know if they're true or not, but these are important allegations to claim that who cares what happened when
someone's
on the verge of turning 18 years old is trying to rape somebody. Like, that's important.
Okay, thank you, Vince.
And these allegations are going to be heard in the Senate. Everybody's going to be heard. It's going to be heard, and people can vote. That's it. So this lady is going to be heard. This is something Senator Dianne Feinstein, the ranking member of that Senate Judiciary Committee, has had in her possession since July, and she only now brought it up. She's trying to delay this process. This lady's going to be heard. The other witnesses, all of them, every single one, say this did not happen.
There were three in that room.
Okay.
Yeah,
And the other person, let me just say this.
Real
quickly,
Vince,
the other person, you know what he wrote? He wrote a book called Wasted, Tales of a Gen X Drunk. That's the other person who talked about how wasted his life was and how alcohol and drunken. And you're going to take
and
a word
other,
of a drunken person.
All right, guys. Got to go.
Who's reporting
gotta go.
An allegation.
Monday
of
Political
they
Face-Off.
They all denied it.
The Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. Thank you, Moe, for your support of the Monday Political Face-Off. Be right back. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030 with our live streaming on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. This portion of the program presented by Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a great time of year right now with fall coming in to get those really the beautiful kind of fall plants and flowers. Get them ready for the garden. Go buy Green Things. Check out your gardening needs. Remember, Zocalo is the home to all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America, and they're part now of the Green Things family on that 13-acre site, so you can get all your gardening supplies and great things for your home from Zocalo. GreenThingsAZ.com. Let's welcome now David Safir. Mr. Safir writes about education primarily at TucsonWeekly.com under their banner, what they call The Range, which is a range of topics pretty much from A to Z. David, how are you, sir?
Doing well, thank you.
You have been writing for, I don't know, maybe up to 10 years about charter schools.
I have, and usually I'm writing about some problems with charter schools, which doesn't mean, by the way, I think charter schools should not exist, because I think they fill a niche, but there are a lot of problems.
You've never said that you want to see all charter schools go away.
I don't. There are certain significant problems with the whole charter school movement, but I think good charter schools have a place in our education system.
What about this investigative series up at the Arizona Republic that they've been really looking into some financial improprieties concerning charter schools?
Yeah, a reporter by the name of Craig Harris has just blown this thing wide open in the last, I'm going to say, month or two, to the point where candidates are starting to look at it, and it looks like improprieties is probably the right word, though you could go further and call it legal corruption in some cases, what's going on. But the latest thing he uncovered, and there have been a few of them, is one of the state representatives, a Republican by the name of Eddie Farnsworth, owns a series of charter schools. They're called Benjamin Franklin Charter Schools, and there are four of them. And owns is the right word because they are for-profit charter schools, which is only allowed in some states and not in other states. Him owning the charter schools, or for-profit, means he owns it just like he owns a neighborhood store or he owns any other business. The money comes in from the state. It's our money. It's taxpayer money. But he can pocket basically anything he doesn't use. Well, he built four buildings, school buildings, you know, taking loans and giving, I think maybe he might have invested in them personally, and paying off those loans with government money. In other words, with the money that comes in per student, he took some of that off, like everybody does, for building, and the buildings are paid for. Okay, so far, so good. He wants to transfer his for-profit charters to a non-profit group. And in the process of transferring them, he's going to sell them the buildings. He's going to make a profit of upwards to $30 million. We don't know how much exactly, but it's upwards to $30 million, according to Craig Harris, and people will have been parsing that. So maybe he'll make $18 million, maybe he'll make $20 million. He is sitting on a gold mine that he financed with taxpayer money, and now he's going to make a whole lot of money from that, and that strikes me as wrong. And the only reason that kind of thing can happen in any number of other financial improprieties in charter schools is we have phenomenally lax charter school regulation by design. When the Republicans voted in the charter school, charter schools allowing them about a quarter century ago, maybe a little bit less, they purposely said, and they've written this down, we want as few regulations as possible. We want this to be taken care of by the marketplace. People will vote with their feet. They'll come into a good school, they'll leave a bad school. Well, that's not exactly what happened, because the charter schools are both good and bad and everything in between. But because there are so few regulations, there are a number of people who have used the lack of regulation to make a whole lot of money for them and their friends. And that, as an educator, just rankles me.
Where is charter school reform, though, on the horizon?
Well, it's funny. This story about Eddie Farnsworth and a couple of other stories, like one where somebody made $8 million off of an online charter school, Primavera Charter School, and then they've somehow managed to put together a $36 million investment portfolio. Bill, this is money that we're paying. It sounds like we're paying them too much. Somehow they're not spending the money. If they can get, the guy can get paid $8 million and they have $36 million socked away, there's something wrong about that. If there's going to be any reform, it's probably not going to come from Republicans. But the election season is still young, and I have a funny feeling that all kinds of Republicans are going to talk about how they want reform. And that's exactly what the Attorney General Mark Brnovich did. He said he was just scandalized. He was shocked to find out that this happened, and we've got to put in reforms, he said. Well, it's too little too late, Mr. Brnovich, and it's too little too late for Republicans, because for years, the media, me, and any number of other people have been talking about some of these situations where, for instance, somebody buys his textbooks or his furniture from his cousin or his good buddy at 50% more, twice as much as you would buy it on the open market. Happens all the time. Somebody will own the school and then also run the charter management organization for the school, and they'll get it from both ends. And Republicans have known about this. Democrats have put up legislation to create greater visibility and greater protections, greater transparency, and to make sure that you can't do self-dealing. It's been voted down by Republicans all time and time and time again. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in November, Bill. This is going to go up to the wire. We're not going to know to the last minute. Who knows? We might not know for weeks and weeks and weeks who's going to control the House. But there's going to be an irony. If Democrats get more control, the irony is going to be we're going to have a better charter school sector, because a more regulated charter school sector will get rid of some of the bad actors and some of the bad schools, and what will be left will be the higher quality charter schools. And that's what, to be honest, I would like to see.
And we're going to hear from Frank Riggs. He's the Republican candidate for superintendent of public education in Arizona. Frank, former congressman from California, he emerged, I think he won by only like 320 votes. That was a really tight primary. He'll be on the show during the 12:45 segment this Wednesday. Then a couple weeks later, his opponent is Kathy Hoffman.
Correct.
Kathy is a school teacher up in the Phoenix area. Well, I believe.
Right. Yeah. I've been following Kathy Hoffman, you know, since her primary race with David Shapiro, which she won by a significant amount. You know, she won by 15,000 votes or something like that.
And that's a little surprising just because David had spent a lot of money on the campaign. He was all over the place.
I was very surprised.
Yeah.
Highly surprised. And I don't know
David's
exactly what to attribute
Tempe
to it.
Tempe councilman.
I'm going to say to some extent that it's part of this being the year of the woman. And I think it's very good to some extent. It never was before, but now I think it's very good to be a woman in terms of certain races. And with education, that may be more true. I didn't have a chance to listen to it, but Riggs and Hoffman had a debate, and
right.
I read about the debate.
On public TV and from Phoenix, yeah.
And both of them were pretty close together on their belief about charter schools. Riggs, I think, is kind of a good government Republican, and good government means being fiscally responsible. So this bothers him. He seems to me and I don't know for sure, but he seems to be on the moderate end, as opposed to where Diane Douglas is, on the more conservative end of the Republican Party. So that's going to be an interesting race, too, because they weren't diametrically opposed in lots of their views. He's much, much, much more for vouchers than Kathy Hoffman is, and that could be a separating point there. I don't know.
And anything to do with vouchers or charter schools on this ballot that's coming up?
Yeah, there's a big one. Boy, you caught me. I should have the number of it. We'll have to look up the number. Okay. But there is a ballot initiative where voting yes says we're going to raise the limit on the number of people who can get the empowerment scholarships accounts or the education savings account, whatever you want to call it, where people basically get a bit of money put away for them, and then they can use that as they wish for schooling, so long as they're not part of a public or charter school. Voting yes will raise the limit, and voting no will keep the limit as it is before the legislature raised it. Now, this is really a funny situation here, because the people who put this together are people who are against raising the limits on vouchers, a group called Save Our Schools. And they, without a lot of money and a lot of shoe leather, they got out there and they got this thing on the ballot. And now it turns out that some conservative groups are agreeing with them and saying we should vote no on it, which is very interesting. And to be honest, Doug Ducey warned about this, of all things, when he was at a Koch Brothers confab, because he said, you know, if this thing passes and we get it through, it's going to set an upper limit on the number of people we can give vouchers to, and we want it to be unlimited. So we kind of sort of would like it to fail, and if it fails, then what happens is they get to go back to the legislature and see if they can pass a cleaner bill or something like that. So it's very, very interesting. If I were to guess, and boy, I guessed wrong last month when I was here with you on something
we'll
else.
Pick that up. Why don't we pick that up?
But then, if I was going to guess, I would say it's going to go down, because I don't know if anybody's going to work to support it.
All right. We're going to pick up the whole invest in ed movement. The initiative did not make the ballot, but we'll pick up on that with David Safir after we take our break. Be right back. 790-2040. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and we're very proud of Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, and their longtime sponsorship of our program. It's only a three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the southwest part of New Mexico in the southwestern United States. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you find a great, there's a real wealth of information, a plethora of information, including great places to stay, and all sorts of recreation ideas for you, including just doing some hanging out in historic Silver City and visiting some of those great Victorian structures that they have in Silver City. Again, southwestnewmexico.org is the starting place. David Safir is with us from TucsonWeekly.com, where he writes about education. We were closing the segment by talking about the proposition pertaining to vouchers. And David, it is officially called 305 on the ballot, Proposition 305.
Right, that's it. And I apologize for not knowing that, but I certainly didn't want to say it incorrectly. So I'm
and
glad
it
you
relates
that up.
To empowerment scholarship accounts. So there'll probably be a lot of confusion among voters.
There
about
will.
This.
I think they purposely made it. The people who were who put it on the ballot want you to vote no. And I think they put it that way because people's default position is, if I don't understand it, I'll vote no. It's harder to get something to pass than to get it to fail. So I think they put it together that way for that reason. But it is, these ballot measures are often so confusing. Vote no means yes. Vote yes means no. It just gets...
Last month, we were discussing Invest in Ed, an initiative that was having some problems with the wording and the legalese, and it just didn't make the ballot. And I'm curious, David, do you think that's going to impact any way the governor's race? Because after all, kind of the centerpiece for both candidates now is turning out to be, hey, I'm the education governor, or in the case of Dr. Garcia, I'm the guy that can give you the most experience with education.
Well, before I answer that, I have to do a formal on-air mea culpa.
I know where it's coming. I know this was this
last time yes. when we were here, you said, you know, this is really in trouble, this Invest yeah. in Ed thing. And I
you
said no,
it's
not in trouble.
It.
Well, I was right for the first time, but not for the second. It went to the Maricopa Superior Court, and the judge said, come on, that's a bit picky. We're not going to throw this off the ballot. So the people who were trying to get this thrown off the ballot, which, by the way, you should know is a Chamber of Commerce who put a lot of money into getting it off the ballot and would have fought it tooth and nail if it was on the ballot, appealed it up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court voted that it should go off the ballot, and we don't know the numbers. In other words, we don't know what the vote was for sure, and we don't know who voted which way because we haven't heard about that yet. I think there's a stall on because I think they're worried about that. So coming back to that, there's a real back and forth. If Invest in Education was on the ballot, most probably it would have pulled out education supporters in droves. So now what happens? Do people slink off into their corners and mope and you know, hold on to their blankies and not vote and say, oh, it's all our fault? Because it was poorly written. There's no question about it. These things usually aren't thrown out for that reason, but it was poorly written. And they might do that, But the other thing that's possible, and certainly the Invest in Ed people are pushing this, is, and I used as a title of one of my posts, don't get sad, get mad. Mm-hmm. Don't go off and say, oh, it's all our fault, never mind, we'll come back before. Mm-hmm. Say, no, we're coming back right now. We're going to vote for people who supported the Invest in Ed initiative, and we're going to show the people who work to throw it off the ballot that they can't stop us. And that's one reason why people have blamed Ducey for this. And Ducey has said, oh, no, it wasn't my fault. He said, you should take a Civics 101 course because there's a separation of powers between the governor, who's the executive, and the Supreme Court, who's the judicial. And that would make a whole lot more sense if Ducey hadn't added two Supreme Court justices. There used to be five, and then Ducey added two more. So this is called court packing, and by packing it with more friendly people, again, we don't know who voted for what yet, but by putting more friendly people on the court, he made it more likely that the decision will go his way. And I'm sure it wasn't a 7-0 vote. I shouldn't say I'm sure of anything anymore since I was wrong last time. Reasonably sure it wasn't a 7-0 vote.
Wasn't your name in the paper, the Star, over the weekend?
Yes, that was very funny. Jonathan
not
Hoffman.
Not in a bad way. Name.
Well, he trashed me good. Jonathan Hoffman writes
I mean, not in a
column.
Bad way that some people don't want their name in the paper.
Oh, no. I haven't done anything terrible.
Exactly.
There we go.
No.
But Jonathan Hoffman thinks I did something terrible by something I wrote. Jonathan Hoffman, who tends to be on the conservative libertarian side, mm-hmm. would really like people to slink off, like I said, and invest in Ed and just say, oh, it's our fault. We'll come back 2 years from now. Let's forget about this whole thing. Let's let it blow over. And I was reading his column Sunday morning, and all of a sudden he said, and this is typified the way people are getting angry over nothing by David Safir, who wrote a post in the Weekly which said people should be red hot angry. And I can't remember exactly what the rest of the quote was about the fact that Invest in Ed was knocked off the ballot by the Chamber of Commerce working to some extent in consort with the newly formed Supreme Court. And he said, oh, you're so wrong about that, and went on and on and on about how wrong I was. And he thought that phrase, red hot angry, was so terrible that he repeated it, I think, 4 times to show how awful it was. And every time he repeated it, I thought, no, I'm getting angrier and angrier and angrier.
You're getting angrier and angrier.
I did something I've never done before. I wrote a post where I put little angry emoticons over the graphic to say,
red-faced.
You go. That's how it goes. And to quote something from an old movie, I felt like I was mad as hell and wasn't going to take it anymore. And I put that all over there and just said, listen, I'm standing on my ground. It is time to be angry since the Republicans have been defunding education, trying to dismantle public education for years. I'm saying not this is something new. This is about time. This has been building for decades, and it finally burst out in this Red for Ed movement, and it's about time, say I.
That movie network was so far ahead of its time,
it
wasn't
was.
It? My
it was.
Goodness, I can still see that. Go to your windows.
Albert Finney.
Yeah, Albert Finney. What a great actor.
It was.
Final topic. Do we have time? Let's see if we can work this in. The Freedom Center, you wrote about this as well. There's a course for high school students at TUSD mm-hmm. going to be removed from the curriculum, huh?
Well, it was removed from the curriculum in the spring, and part of it was I wrote about it and said this was put together by the Freedom Center, and lo and behold, the school board didn't know about it because it didn't go through them. So they said, we're going to yank this course, and didn't say it was never coming back. So right now they said, well, let's take a look at the textbook and see if the textbook is okay and put it on public review. That happens all the time. The district puts textbooks on public review so they can get comments on it before the board votes on it. But the people who wrote the textbook said, I'm sorry, you can't put an online version
really?
Up. No. And apparently the standard practice is you put up an online version so you and I and anybody who goes to the TUSD website can buzz through it, which means all kinds of people who are experts and non-experts can look at it and chime in. And they said, nope, we're only going to put the hard copy version down at the district administration office. If you want to come down and walk down there and sit down at a desk and read it, you can do it. So what Superintendent Trujillo said is, I think we're going to pull this 60 days, it's supposed to be on for 60 days, and get a committee together to look at it by committee. Now, why they did that, I don't know for sure, but these people like to work by stealth. I know these people sounds like I'm being very conspiratorial, but it's part of the entire mindset of the Koch brothers who helped fund this to work under the radar, which is why nobody on the board knew about this, and they would rather not have too many people actually look at the book. That's the only thing I can imagine, because it would take nothing for them to put it online.
Was there a copyright issue or something with putting it online?
No, not at all. Okay. No, this is typical that most publishers will put it online for it to be viewed.
All right. David Safir, we'll look for your work, and you've got a post coming up, I believe, about the charter schools. Did that already go up yet?
It went up this morning, and probably my next post is going to be about this textbook thing with the Philosophy 101 course, because I think it's important for people to know it.
All right, David, thank you very much. We've already got your appointment penciled in for October. Hard to believe we're talking about October already.
Yeah, it's getting chilly in the air, Bill. You're feeling that chill
quite.
In the air?
I had to go to Alaska to feel that.
There you
go. The end of August for the peak of the autumn leaves. So I get two autumns this year. All right, David, thanks so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Bill.
Coming up this afternoon, we've got Michael Medved right after this program. Wake Up Tucson tomorrow, 6 to 9. Then me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you, along with my friend Ray Allen, 12:04. Till then, have a great afternoon and an evening.